And so I realized I said that Daral was sick and like I'm here and like I didn't say who I was. But it's funny because I know like probably like 3/4 of you, so I neglect it. But for people who don't know, my name is Karen G. Williams, and I'm a member here. And I've been coming to New York Insight since about 2008, and I'm currently in CDL5. And yeah, and I also, I'm a practice leader at the BK Sangha, which is like it's part of New York Insight, but it's the one that meets in Brooklyn on First Avenue between 6th and, I always forget, I just know, between, it's closer to 6th Avenue, so First Street between 6th Avenue and 7th Avenue. So come and check us out there if you're in Brooklyn too. So it's a quaint little space, so yeah. So who, is there anybody's first time here tonight? I probably don't. Yeah, a couple? Yeah, oh, great, awesome. Is it anybody's first time meditating? Have you met your first time? Awesome, double awesome, right? We all want to be there, right? First time, right? Okay, so we're going to do, I'll give a little bit of guiding meditation tonight. And then, but if you aren't new to meditation, and feel free to allow my voice to drift off and rock and roll in your practice, okay? Great. So we find ourselves in a comfortable seating position, doing a brief check-in with our bodies, not changing anything at this moment, but just taking stock of where you are, right? Feeling any vibrations throughout your body, any tension, any weariness, any coolness or warmth, right? Just noticing what's happening in our bodies in this moment, in this place, at this time. And letting that go. Letting go any thoughts, any judgments that we had about where our bodies were. And so we root ourselves in our seat, feeling the contact of our buttocks to our chair or our cushion, allowing the seat to hold us, allowing it to give us stability. And we briefly do a more systematic body scan, beginning at our feet, feeling our feet come in contact with the floor or our legs. Moving up to our ankles, feeling any sensations. Moving up to our calves. Moving to our knees. Feeling any vibrations, any coolness. And then shifting our awareness to our thighs. Feeling the contact of our clothing or our hands on our thighs. Inviting your thigh muscles to relax. Moving up to our hip flexors. Breathing space. Feeling any vibrations, any tension. Moving our awareness to our core. Feeling the in-breath and the out-breath. Allowing our core to stabilize us. Moving to our heart center. allowing your shoulders to move up and back and down, opening up the heart center. Feeling our right arm. Feeling the forearm. Noticing any sensations in your arm, in your fingertips. And shifting our awareness to our left arm. The left forearm. Noticing any sensations in the left arm or in the fingers. And I'm moving our awareness to our necks. Feeling the weight of our head. Allowing our chin to be slightly tucked. Allowing the back of our neck to elongate. Moving to our face. Bringing our awareness to our jaw muscles, our jawbone. Noticing any fluttering of the eyes. Just take a moment and review your body. Again, taking stock of your body in this moment, at this time, in this room. And so for the remainder of the set, we're going to use our breath as the anchor. And just as our mind wandered, perhaps while we were doing the body scan, our mind will wander when we use the breath as the anchor. But we come back to the breath with gentle kindness and awareness. And so we might feel the breath at our nostrils, or we might feel the breath in our chest, or perhaps our abdomen, or even the whole body breathing. And so we pick the place where our breath is most prominent. And when our mind wanders, we come back to that breath in that place. And it's with that gentle awareness of returning to the breath that we strengthen our mindful practice. Where's your mind now? Have you wandered off? Return to the breath. We use the breath to anchor us in this moment, in this body, at this time, in this room. I invite you to take a moment and check in with your body. Check in to see if any tension has built up. Are you feeling pensive? Is your mind wandering? What is the state of your attitude? And you let that go and return to the breath, using the breath as your anchor. Again, bringing you to this moment, to this body, to this time, to this room. And for the last few minutes of the sit, I invite you to take a fine-tooth comb to your breath, noticing the quality, noticing the elements, the warmth, the coolness, the rhythm. Allowing yourself to bring just a little bit more effort, a kind, gentle effort to staying with the breath, building our mindfulness practice. Allowing the breath to flow through your body. Great. So just so full disclosure for tonight. So we're going to do a little group work, but we're not going to do that just right away. So I'm just letting you know. So like when they say we're going to pair up or something, then your like anxiety goes through like the roof and you're like, I want to bolt. So I'm telling you now so that maybe throughout, like, you can calm, be like, okay, I know I'm going to pair up. But we're actually going to do triads. There might be a group of two if I count it correctly, but it's really, so don't, you can fear the dyads, but there won't be dyads, there will be triads. So tonight, I'm going to be reflecting on flowing with life. How do we make the Dharma, how can the Dharma help us flow with our life? Or I'll be making a lot of sports references tonight, so actually being in the zone, right? So how many people here, it's okay if you're not athletic or anything, but because I think that the zone can be any part of like our life, right? So how do we flow with it? How do we stick with it? We can be in the zone when we're working, right, when we're getting things done and things are feeling good. But just for a quick show of hands, how many people like to do athletic things or whatever? It's okay if you don't, right? You know, you might like to hike, and, you know, I consider that, or walking, like, you know, you like to walk in, as opposed to taking the train. But so just a little bit. So I grew up watching basketball with my mom, and it was a really great time. And we'd sit and watch basketball. We'd like holler, we'd whoop, we'd do all that kind of stuff and yell at the screen. And so I like to say, like, Magic Johnson in his heyday basically like mesmerized our hearts, right? And so you're like, Magic Johnson. I used to be like, when the Lakers were big, right? And so, and even as I watched, you know, the Lakers, I secretly wanted to be a Laker girl. maybe like a lot of girls did, but there was something about that. But nonetheless, you know, my mom supposedly was a really great basketball player at in high school, and my aunt used to tell me about that. You know, I never saw my mom play basketball, and she didn't really, you know, say, yeah, I was good. You know, she just kind of like silently kind of sit there and kind of take it all in. So I kind of picked up that she was. I wasn't good at basketball at all. I quit my freshman year because I realized like it was too much. I couldn't do it. but I played sports. But now I've let a lot of those sports go, and I play roller derby. and so roller derby has consumed a lot of my life these last couple years, and I adore it. I love it. And so a lot of times when people ask me, they say, oh, you play roller derby, and I'm like, yeah. And then they say, oh, you practice meditation. Okay, wait, hold up, wait, I'm missing something, right? Because oftentimes I think we think of like meditation as this person that's like stoically like sitting on the cushion and, you know, all zen like, and like, you know, there's like not the kind of aggression that we typically associate with roller derby. You know, if you're not familiar, it's like we're skating on quad skates, and, you know, we're padded, and like, you know, we're hitting each other, right? And we get loud, like, and giving and getting a good hit is quite amazing, right? but I think that for me, the more I play roller derby and the more that I practice my meditation, they both deepen, because I see them as intimately connected, right? And that the more that my mindfulness grows on the cushion, the more that I can be mindful on the track. Right, the more that I can think about my intentions, my goals, am I hitting out of vengeance, or am I hitting because I'm being strategic and I'm playing with my team members, right? And so to be an effective athlete and a part of the team, the Dharma becomes like the center of like my life, right? And so how am I practicing both on and off that cushion, right? And so the Four Noble Truths, particularly the Eightfold Path, has actually been really my guide of looking at my effort, my speech, you know, bringing some wisdom to it, looking at how concentrated I am, right? Taking those apart. And so for me, the question sometimes I ask, how can I be open and kind on and off the track, right? How can I use the Eightfold Path to strengthen my game, my ability to be in the flow, right? My ability to be in that zone, right? And how can the flow of with life, how can I flow with life and make my whole life the zone, right? And so that's what really we're talking about here, right? And so as I flow on the track, I can flow off the track, because then they become like seamless. And so we've been on the subway and we see that the seamless ad, right? Where you can like order, you know, and then you order your food and then boom, like it's like seamless, you know? And so sometimes I even think about like, you go maybe more so for women, they always like seamless underwear, like seamless this, like whatever, like we don't, you know, so like how we're always trying to do like this, like stitching together, but not stitching together, right? And so, you know, for me, like I came across like a lot of thinking about mindfulness and sports and being in this zone when I first read Phil Jackson's book, The 11 Rings, which is like this amazing book, and it just like rocked my world, right? And him like talking about how he brought the meditation practice, the Zen practice to athletes, and reading excerpts of like Jordan and other athletes that are talking about like, yeah, like this stuff really works, and how we work on like our mental game. Right, and I think that's really important. And just recently, thanks to Dalila in New York Insight, because I do have your book, I still have your book, it's all good. Not gonna give it back to you. Looking at George Mumphrey, who was actually the mindful coach with Phil Jackson. And he just came out with his own book, The Mindful Athlete, Secrets to Pure Performance. And so in his book, he outlines five superpowers. And they're really based off of the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths being, one, there is suffering. Two, there's a cause of suffering, which talked about craving. And three, there's freedom, a sensation from suffering. And four, the way to ending this is like through the Eightfold Path. And so his five superpowers he talks about is mindfulness, concentration, insight, right effort, and trust. Right. And so bringing that, like thinking about how we interact with ourselves, right, and our teammates, and how we're setting goals, and what does it look like to be a mindful athlete, to bring like those same qualities of our sitting practice to the work or what we do on the court. And we can think about how do we bring those same qualities to our work in our daily lives, right? In our office space, in our relationships with our children, with our loved ones, with our partners, with our lovers, right? So how do we make that part of the zone, right? How are we in the zone and in the flow with them becomes important. Right. And so I want to read, he talks about the zone. He says, we can deconstruct the anatomy of flow in any way we want, but the truth of the matter is that it all starts with the mind. Flow is your ability to stay in the present moment. It's a very particular state of mind. The ability to stay present is what fosters the zone experience. There's no denying that strength and skill are a big factor in achieving high performance in sports, but many players have extraordinary strength and skills. The real key to high performance and tapping into flow is the ability to direct and channel these strengths and skills fully in the present moment, and that starts in your mind. The flip side of this equation is also true. No matter how strong or skillful you might be, your mind can also impede the talent from being expressed. It often does so in insidious ways if you don't take care of it. You've probably heard before, and it's true, that the mind is a muscle. You need to take care of it through daily practice. It's that simple and that profound. Right? So understanding that we can exercise like this muscle, and it's about coming back to the moment each and every time that we find ourselves getting lost in the meditation practice, right? Coming, using the breath, coming back to this body, this moment, this time, and this room, right? And so when we're in our lives and we have challenges or even happy moments, right? Bringing ourselves back to those happy moments, bringing ourselves back to those challenges so that our whole lives become the zone where we practice, right? And so in the zone, and when we bring mindfulness, things slow down and everything seems to click when we're playing, right? And so for me, in Derby, my edge in terms of thinking about being in the zone is right speech. And so, I have a bit of a potty mouth, And also, sometimes I can blurt things out. And so for me, I'm always working with that, right? So this the idea of edges also in roller derby. So we think of like the four quads, like skates, and we can think about the pads of our feet, right? So edges being like the inside edges and the outside edges. And so when you're on the track, like agility is really important, being able to move. And the way that we move is like we move on our edges, right? We're moving back and forth, and we're always trying to find like that balance, right? And so we constantly in life, we push against our edges and we work against our edges. And so remembering that as we flow, like meeting your edge, right, is also, it's important, right, to kind of push that and then pull back some, right, knowing how much effort and where to apply more pressure. So I have to work with both edges when I'm on the track, working with the edges of my skates, right, my wheels, working on the edges of my right speech. Right. So I'll just share a couple of small antidotes. So a lot of times when we leave the track, or even we think about when we're leaving work, like something isn't going right. Right? We know things just don't go right. And in that moment, we can do that kind of like self-check and being like, oh, you know, what type of speech should I be using? How should I be using my speech? And so the Buddha talks about there's a couple of ways that we can check in with our speech. One, we can ask ourselves, is it timely? Right? Is it just the right time to actually be saying something? Is it true? Right? Is what I'm saying true to the moment, true to what's happening? Is it spoken in a gentle and kind of kind way? Right? Is what is said being beneficial? Right? Because it can be timely, it can be true, it could be, you could speak it in gentle, but it might not be beneficial. You might think it's beneficial for yourself or the other person, but it's also that check-in. What's beneficial for you might not be beneficial for the person that you're speaking with. So checking in, you know, with that. And is it spoken with the mind of having loving kindness, right? And so sometimes, like, you know, all of those other things, but we just want to get back. We just want to, you know, right the whatever the wrong is, right? So checking in. So if these five things are in line, then, right, like, then we can begin our practice with speech, right? And so I often have this when we come off the track and things haven't gone right, so I have to ask myself, is something that I want to say, am I trying to correct so that, you know, we can bring more skill and more accuracy to our next play? Or am I just frustrated because I believe that a player or my teammate wasn't there when they needed to be there, or I did something, or the call was wrong, right? And so all of those is like, well, what's the thrust of the game, right? Even as we're working throughout the day, right, checking in with ourselves, like, is what I have to say going to move the agenda forward in a wise, in a kind way, in a beneficial way, right? And so finding the zone is about practice. And so we practice with right speech, just like we practice with everything else. And sometimes when we practice with it, it doesn't come out, and so we let it go, right? And that is also part of the practice of, like, how we talk to ourselves. Because I realized that right speech begins with myself. When I'm not practicing right speech with myself, it can keep me from being in that zone. Right. So even if I come off the track and I say, oh my goodness, why did I do that? And, you know, I'm not ready, you know, for the next time that I'm called out. Right. And also, you know, that negative self-talk that we give us, like, I broke my ankle about a year and a half or so ago. And so I had just started back playing. I was drafted, and it was the first day of my team practice, and I broke my ankle. And I was quite, you know, I was a little devastated. And I'm back playing, and people are like, you're back playing, you broke your ankle, right? I broke it in two places. I have a plate and 9 screws on one side, and I have a screw on the other side. I had 2 surgeries, right? And so, you know, that first year back playing, I sat the bench a lot. Who wouldn't sit someone on the bench? It's their first year back, right? And playing with speech was hard, right? Because, you know, the the self, the doubt came in of the talk, then the comparing mind, you know, like, I mean, everything, it was in full blast, right? And so having to really check myself, and I still have to do that, right? Because there's still things that are difficult and challenging for me to do on the track with using my edges and wanting the ankle to do something that it's just not ready to do, or it probably may never do, right? So being aware of that, and that awareness and bringing that mindfulness practice, you know, if I don't, it totally messes up the zone. Like, there's no way I could ever get into a zone if I'm constantly focused on comparing and what I can't do and that talk and that mind, and it's like, and it's just constant, right? And so really trying to turn that off. And I think with that, it's like we also have to find the silences, right? I think it's right speech is also about what we don't say. So, and a lot of times we talk about it, it's what we say. And, you know, and it's funny because this year I'm captaining two teams. I'm the co-captain of a team and the captain of another team. And, you know, and I look at that and I'm like, wow, like, you know, there's obviously something that's going on here, you know, that's put you in that position, right? And so, you know, sometimes I had a skater, we were going back and forth in email, and I was just like, you know what? I think silence is the way to go right now. Let's not respond to these emails anymore. And so that's what I want us to think about speech, right? And so speech is not just what we speak, but speech is also in our emails too. And sometimes we just have to be silent. And it's not to be silent that I'm like not going to respond to you because I'm disregarding you, but it's also letting things like land in the space, right? Because when things land, sometimes the energy around them can dissipate, right? And that's as much as important when we're using speech as having that silence, right? And so Pema Chodron, she's a Tibetan meditation teacher, and she reminds us that being in the gap, she calls it getting gappy. Right, finding those gaps, right? It's really important about practice. And she talks more about this in one of the Shabala Sons magazines. And she's on the cover with Katie Lang, right? And they talk about this idea of like, we can miss so much when we're caught up in the speaking speech part of it, that sometimes there's a lot for us to learn in being silent. Right, and so understanding the relationship between silence and the speaking of like right speech, right, and sometimes like I find that just even 2 seconds of silence, right, when I'm on the court, and just having that moment of like taking a pause and looking to see what's there can allow us to then attack or whatever we do on the track to come at something at a different angle. And that's what the gap is there. And that's what the silence allows us to do, right? That pause, that moment when you're at your computer, before you answer the phone, before you speak, right? Do we check in? Is it timely? Is it beneficial? That gap, that pause. Or maybe nothing needs to be said, right? And so I'm still learning to play with the gaps and, you know, getting silent. And the other day, I've been having, I got some feedback and from my captain, because I'm just a co-captain, but I still get feedback, you know, and at one point she was like, calm, should I, you know, tread, you know, calm, and like whatever, told me to be calm, and like, I, you know, and I have this image of myself that I'm calm, because I'm like, I teach meditation, I'm calm, you know, like whatever, I'm calm, what are you talking about, like, I can be yelling, but I'm calm, you know, and so, So in that moment, like I almost wanted to say something, and I haven't said anything to her. But then, like, if we're at practice yesterday, and I realized that I did yell something, and I was like, oh, it was the tonal quality that is making it being, it's like that's being read as something that isn't calm. And I think that's something we often forget when we're speaking, our tonal quality, right? And so even on the track, like bringing it down and still having calm and still being focused, right? And so that was a lesson for me, though, even though I still felt a sense of calm, like I knew, like I was just saying, the jammer's on the end, jammer's on the end, right? And but it was, for what she heard, it was a little bit too much, right? And so it read as not being calm. And that was a check for me, right? And so being like, ah, okay, even though I might feel calm in this moment, but, you know, having like, how am I, how is the delivery, right? Is it, again, is it in this like loving kindness way? And it probably wasn't, right? Because I was probably frustrated that they weren't getting there and the jammer was on the inside, right? So I think it's also definitely taking a couple of seconds, and that pause in that moment allowed me to really kind of see that before I just went and said, what do you mean I'm not going to calm? Like, you know, because then of course I wouldn't have been calm then, you know. But I'm going to end there, and I'll just say that so to preempt the question, so my background is you know, my roller derby name is Back Alley Dread, D-R-E-D. And some of people are like, what? She just cut off our dreads, you know. But I want to say it's not really about dread, D-R-E-A-D. It's dread like in reference to Dred Scott, right? And so who was the African-American man who was enslaved and sued for his freedom. And so my tagline becomes practice wholeheartedly on and off the track. And so really trying to figure out how to be in the zone, like how to make our whole lives the zone. And so for tonight in our triads, what I'd like for us to do is we're going to break up into three. And so, and we should have, yeah, we should definitely have a little time to come back. And so each person will get a chance to speak. And so the first person, the question is, how do I make my whole life the zone? And so thinking about what keeps us from making our whole life the zone. And so we might think about it's something that's, you know, as speech, as effort, but we also might want to be attuned to, like, what is it, what keeps us as a person of color, right? What keeps us from, you know, making our whole life the zone, giving the political climate right now and things that are going on. And, you know, we can, you know, there's many ways that could, like, you know, keep or inform our lives, right? That we might see and that we might want to work with or against or whatnot. And so what will happen is the first person will ask one of the people, like, what makes your whole life the zone? And that third person there is to silently listen, right? We were both silently listening, but you're the witness, right? And so, and then the person who has asked, that the person who's speaking, will then respond and say, I heard you say. And so you give that person back, and still that third person is the silent listener, right? Of listening to the pauses, the beats, right? And then we'll go around and each person will have a chance to say what makes, what it's keeping them from making their whole life to zone. And then giving the person back what they said, and then also being a witness to that. Okay, and so we do a mindful, I'll ring the bell at the end of the time. You want to ask how much time we have each?
Are we repeating the question?
You don't, you just repeat it, you just ask them once. You don't have to keep repeating the question.
What's the question?
What keeps you from making your whole life to zone? So that's what I want you to reflect on. What keeps you from making your whole life the zone? And so each person will have about a minute and a half to 2 minutes to talk. And then the reflector will only have a minute to reflect. So you can't say everything, but you want to get the kernel, the essence of what they said. And so when we listen, we also do our mindfulness listening, right? And we'll have a chance to kind of discuss afterwards. But giving that person the space, not feeling that you have to nod or being like, yeah, I get you, right? You know, just tuning into your own body, your own breath as you listen and take that in. Okay? So we can click three and then, and I'll prompt you so you don't have to. So if those weren't, the instructions weren't that clear, I'll still prompt you. And so I want to give us an opportunity to either share about the exercise, something that came up, or how it felt to be the speaker, the person who gave back, or the person who was silently listening, or any thoughts that might have come up tonight. Or so this is an open time for you to share. And yeah, I think that's it. So, and just remember, you know, crosstalk, so speak from the eye.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay.
It's beautiful. Interesting.
Which parts of myself have more currency in that engagement. And which I found very profound, and it made me pause.
Thank you.
My name is Fiona. I just wanted to share that I found the experience of having to repeat someone's story really exposing and vulnerable. In that there is deep responsibility in the 1 minute that you have to practice deep listening and then to reiterate it in a way that's authentic. And I felt that is a really powerful practice to just do with loved ones at work, as vulnerable as it might be.
Thank you. Yeah.
I sometimes think about mindfulness of speech, or my speech is also like my unspoken speech, the thoughts that I'm having. And when I had spoken and it was my turn to hear when I had said reflected back to me, it was sort of a good practice in mindful thinking for me, because, you know, I noticed when maybe something I had said wasn't reflected back in the same language, the same words, like I would have some questions about, was I being heard, you know, and having to sort of check myself on that and allow some spaciousness that somebody might put things in their own phrases that has nothing to do with whether or not I was heard and can't assume those things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a useful exercise for me in that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You guys are bringing up some really beautiful qualities here, right? The responsibility of giving back and listening to what's give back, and allowing the most respectful, sometimes my Dharma friend, she's like, the most respectful interpretation, right? Like she tells me, I'd be like, oh my God. She says, no, let's talk about the most, let's not assume that someone is, you know, not hearing or what, you know, and so language is something that we play with, right? I think it's really beautiful in the care, right? And I wanted to say in terms of the recipe, right, you got me thinking, sometimes you don't want to put everything in the pot because it's going to be nasty. I mean, sometimes too much salt or too much pepper, you just cannot go in your kitchen and start putting everything out there because that's just like... It's just like nasty, like, and things don't blend, right? And so we bring discernment to that. And so perhaps it's about discerning and looking at what's called for. And it's not necessarily that the whole self isn't there, but how do we discern what's needed, right? How do we discern the language that we use? How do we discern how deep we listened, right? How do we, like all of these is sometimes it's not, because it's a practice. And so it's not an end-all, be-all, you know? So that in at one point, like maybe a racial analysis or maybe she said kind and you wanted to say gentle, like, or, you know, maybe like whatever it is, right? Like, so it's there, it's about, you know, that practicing. Mm-hmm. It's just, we have a few more minutes if anybody else wants to jump in. And so I'll leave you with two things, and one just, and so we'll go ahead and we can close, but I'm also an anthropologist by trade. And so, of course, you know, I had to find something the anthropologist said, you know. So the feminist anthropologist, Camilla Vesaranam, in her book, Frictions of Feminist Ethnography, she does a lot of interviewing and things with women who have experienced, you know, trauma and whatnot. And she said that if we do not know how to hear silence, we cannot apprehend what is being spoken, how speech is framed, right? And so remembering that we have to hear the silence and we have to pay respect to the silence, even as we speak, right? Even as the speech, and understanding that they're two of the same, right? And they go hand in hand. And so we can share the merit. So finding a comfortable seating position. Taking a moment to check in with our bodies, our attitude, our mind state. What's happening in this moment, in this body, in this place, in this room? Letting go of what was spoken, what was heard, what was witnessed in the triads. Bringing our full awareness to the here and now. Knowing that all of the positive energy that we've cultivated tonight not only benefits us, but benefits all beings. And so I share this with you. If we make the choice to walk the path of the spiritual warrior, we have to act. To use a line from the movie Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, do or do not. There is no try. The whole scene takes place when Luke Skywalker thinks that his X-Wing starfighter is about to sink into a bog. He starts to panic and the scene unfolds like this. Luke Skywalker, oh no, we'll never get out now. Yoda, so certain are you? Always with you, it cannot be done. Hear you nothing that I say? Luke, Master, moving stones around is one thing, but this is totally different. Yoda, no, no different. Only different in your mind. You must unlearn what you have learned. Luke, all right, I'll give it a try. Yoda, no, try not. Do or do not. There is no try. When Yoda is essentially saying is that Luke needs to commit. We must commit to this practice. You either move forward with intention or you do not. There is no in between. You do or you do not. You keep your intentions good and strong. That is right effort, even if you fail. And so we continue to make that seamless connection between our on the cush practice, on our cushion practice, and our off cushion practice, making the whole life our zone. And so it is, and so we allow it to be. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.